Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
State and local is where it's at. No disrespect to the federal level, but so much of what impacts our everyday lives happens at the local level. And so if we're not doing everything that we can to educate in a real world sense, our students on what it means to have impact on community and society at that level, then I think we do them a great disservice.
That's former Florida Democratic gubernatorial nominee Andrew Gillum. He was at Howard University today talking electoral politics to students. We are in election mode after wrapping up the third Democratic election, Democratic debate last night. We have another one coming up next month. So tonight we are focused on some of the youngest voters, those who are in some cases casting a ballot next year for the first time. What's on their minds? We're going to find out tonight. My guests are Nikitra Robinson, founder of Black Girls Vote, Kayla Andrews, Black Youth Advocate with the National Coalition on Black Civic Participation, and Dr. Elsie Scott, director of the Ron Walters Leadership and Public Policy Center here at Howard University. What do you think about the youngest voters? What do you expect to hear from them? They may have a message for you. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Thank you all for coming in. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
It's such an honor.
So Andrew Gillum said today that the youngest voters, this newest generation of voters, need to be engaged. They need to be informed. I got to ask you, Kayla, you're the youngest one at the table. Obviously, you're engaged and informed and involved, but are your peers?
I'm not sure. I think that's kind of why Black Youth Vote exists, is to make sure that we are involved and that we are informed. I think it's important that we are know about what's happening in politics as they occur, because we will be voting. And if we don't vote, we will see the consequences of that, and as we see with several different elections that have happened. And so Black Youth Vote addresses that issue and makes sure that millennials, people my age, younger, 18 to 35 especially, are involved and that they know what's going on so that they can make informed choices in these elections.
Mm-hmm. Well, how would you describe the emotional temperature, Nikitra, of this election year, pre-election year? Obviously, a lot of energy around 2008. A lot of energy around 2012. You know, the two Obama elections. But now, after 2016, from your perspective, are things cool? Are things hot in between? What would you say?
How would I rate the temperament? I guess it depends on the population and who you're talking to. And
your constituency.
Oh, my constituency. Oh, Black women. So I would say, particularly young Black women, I think right now in the information age, they have access to the information, but people aren't honing in on what's going on. You know, folks aren't really channeling the debates as of yet, here and there. But I think as we get closer to the election, we'll see more of that, more people in tune to what's happening, what they're talking about. And I think right now, to be quite honest, there's so many candidates running. So folks are still, you know, saying, here, I'm aware. I'm looking, but not as too in tune as we would think or as hope, as we saw in 2012 and 28 in 2008, because you had a minimal amount of candidates. And then there was this rock star at the time, Barack Obama, who we all fell in love with.
But you've been at the CBC this yes. week. What are you hearing from your constituency,
you know,
there?
So, you know, interesting enough, we just had an amazing panel, and I'd be remiss if I didn't thank Congressman Elijah Cummings, and we had a Black Women Ladies in Politics panel. And what we saw with the young Black people there, the young Black women voters who were there, they were engaged, right? And we see that they want to be involved, and they were excited, and they were empowered. And that's what that panel and that setting was for. So I do believe that in 2020, you'll see more women of color, particularly young Black girls, who are going to take over, but not necessarily take over. They're more excited, but they're not going to go with the pandering. They want policies. And so what I think is super important that we're looking at now is that you can't just expect for these young Black voters to say, we'll vote for you just because. They want policy. Here at Howard University, what let's talk about HBCU funding. We saw what happened at Bennett College, and to see Bennett College, one of two historically all-black female universities, to lose their accreditation. And so that's important to us. And so we have to talk about student loan debt forgiveness. We have to talk about reparations. Those are the issues, social injustices, racial injustices that people want to talk about, and they don't want to swept under the rug, particularly young people. They're not just going to give you their vote, and that's why we see more people, some willing to register as independent voters, because they think that at times that their vote can be taken for granted by, let's say, the Democratic Party. And so they're willing to have, I'm not going to say they're going to go that far to say I'm going to vote or register Republican, but independent, saying, hey, you're going to have to work for my vote. And I think, you know, I'm not upset with that. I think it's a good approach.
What do you think about what she said, Dr. Scott?
I agree with her. We recently did a poll, the Black Women's Roundtable recently did a poll with Essence Magazine, where we looked at black women, the black woman's vote, and how they are feeling about issues and how they're feeling about candidates at this point. And that's some of what we found, that people are looking for a reason to vote. They want to be engaged. At this point, they are not as in tune in the election in terms of a choice of candidates. I think that people are just overwhelmed. There's just too many candidates. They jumped out too soon. And so people say, oh, give us a break. You know, let us have some narrowing down of these candidates. I mean, even myself, you know, it's just so many. And I'm a political scientist. I have not chosen a candidate yet. And I find that a lot of young people are saying that we want to wait. But I hope that they don't get turned off by the process, that they will choose not to be as engaged as we want them to be. But I spoke with one young person today, and that young person said, well, I'll vote for anybody as long as I can have some change in America now.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tonight we are talking about the newest generation of voters. What are they looking for? What are they listening to? What are their thoughts as it relates to the upcoming presidential election, election 2020. If you have a comment, if you have a question for my guests, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Kayla, you were just nodding at what Dr. Scott was saying. What were your thoughts about that?
I just agree with her in saying that I think people are looking, especially young voters, are looking for a reason to vote. Of course, we know voting should be a right. It is a right, and it should be treated as a right. And that's a different conversation. But I think people are trying to find a reason to vote, especially amongst the Democratic candidates. Because there are so many, it's difficult to find one voice that sticks out amongst another. Those are the challenges that I think those candidates face. And I think that we're seeing them scramble to find a way to do that with there being so many. And so that's why the debate was so interesting last night, and has been this whole journey.
The other two, you know, my other two guests here, you know, Nakedra and Dr. Scott were working last night, but you did see some of the debate last night?
Yes, I saw some of it.
What did you think about it? It was terse, testy, some would say tantalizing, if I can use all of those T's. A lot of talking, a lot of trash talking. I think those are all the T's that I can get in. What did you think about that, particularly that incident between Julian Castro and Vice President Joe Biden?
I think that it's discourse. I think that's what debates are, as Julian Castro stated. I don't think that, I think we all know politics is not always clean cut. And so, of course, if someone might recount something that they've said or disagree with something they previously said, that can be addressed. It's free speech. We have the right to say what we need to say. And so Julian Castro calling Biden out for misspeaking or whatever he did do, I don't think there's anything inappropriate about it, because we have to hold people accountable for what they say. Rhetoric is all that we have right now at this point. I think we're looking for policy, but right now rhetoric is the main is what we're really receiving. So we have to hold people to that.
So it doesn't bother you that at least last night there were a few cut cards?
I mean, I think
tell the truth and shame the devil. I'd like to know. I mean, you know, your opinion is your opinion. You know, if they're going to be doing the dozens, joning, whatever you want to call it, doesn't bother you?
I mean, I think that I don't know. I feel like these things are not clean and clear cut. I think everyone has an opinion. And so the voters will have to decide if that bothers them or not.
Mm-hmm. Nikitra, how are the young voters, in your opinion, different from, you know, my generation, Dr. Scott's generation? How do you think they are?
Yeah, I just want to just piggyback back on what I just said a little earlier. And I think that my parents' generation, they were taught to register as Democrat. Why? I mean, that's what my mother told me, you know, looking back, the Voting Rights Act, you know, the mass exodus of Republican black people who were registered Republican. But LBJ said, I'll support the Voting Rights Act. So a lot of them registered as Democrat. And so automatically it was like, I'm going to register as a Democrat because that's what I told. But that's what I am told. But now we see more people more curious, and they're asking the questions. They're doing research on, you know, those policies that have been passed or policies that not have gone in support of the African-American community. And so when I'm talking to people in the community, African-Americans, particularly in a city like Baltimore, who've been impacted by criminalization, you know, marijuana, you know, social justice reform, not being able to not only vote, but have been incarcerated, mass incarceration. So those things are impacting them when we're out in the community. And the first thing these guys say is, I can't register to vote because I have a record. It's like, no, there are laws that have been changed. But what's your pain point? What's hurting you? Why are you upset? Why are you angry? And everyone has a story. And so first you have to engage them. And while we are engaging them, first, and depending on the population, you have to knock down that barrier and see what's your pain point, what's going on in your family, what's going on in your community. And then talking to them, kind of what Andrew Gilliam said, that politics are local, and having them and letting them understand that politics impacts your everyday life. And so now I think they're more curious with social media and, you know, technology, something that we didn't have growing up. There's so much information there, but we also have to make sure that we're fact checking and it's not myths, because you get a lot of false news and things that are inaccurate. So I think that now people are more willing to have the conversation and they're more engaged. And I think that as we get closer to the election, we'll see more people of color, particularly young black women, who have the power to influence their brothers, their husbands, their sons to get out and vote. So this black girl magic that I see, they are fearless. And that's what I admire so much about them. Really quick story. The young women today at Howard University, we have a chapter of Black Girls Vote at Morgan State University, American University. And this past Tuesday, we got a approved for a chapter at North Carolina A&T University. I have 20 girls at Howard University who came to our event today and said, oh, we're getting a chapter. They demanded it. And I said, you know what? You're getting a chapter. You're next on our list. And that goes to show that this young black generation of young women, they're fearless, and I admire them, but they're not just going to take the handouts. They demand the seats at the table. And as Shirley Chisholm said, they don't give you a seat, bring a phone into you. So they're coming. They're ready.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about the youngest generation of voters. Who are they? What are their thoughts as we get closer to election 2020? If you have a comment or a question, give us a call again. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Teresa, calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Good evening.
Hi.
My concern is that when I hear young people say that they have to be inspired, I get the inspiration. But if young people stay at home, if the Democrats end up nominating someone that maybe is they're not inspired by, my concern is that they'll stay at home. And, oh, by the way, if Donald Trump is reelected, it's not just the policies, it's the judges. Mm-hmm. So if young women care about their bodies, and those who have the LGBTQ, everything will start to be overturned if this man gets another 4 years. So I would just like to say to the young people, you may not get everything you want in a candidate, but you're going to get something.
Hmm. Interesting. Teresa, thank you so much.
I agree with her statements. Like I said, voting is a right, and it's a right that we had to fight for. And so I do find that voting is the only way to respect, it's the best way to respect your elders and their sacrifices. And it's not a question for me, if I'm going to vote, it's who am I going to vote for. With that being said, I still feel like I should have an option to say, these people aren't serving me. Of course, I will have to pick someone. But if someone's not serving me in the ways that I need to be served, if I'm not being catered to, if I feel like I'm being pandered to, those things will come into play. And I think that young voters, I think ultimately the education is the reason that young voters might not feel obligated right now. Yes, they understand that our ancestors had to fight for it, but do they understand the implications of what their vote, not voting, will mean? And I think that that's why Black Youth Vote is so important, because when you bring education to young people, they can then understand that elections have consequences, that there are going to be changes in law. Like you said, politics are local. Things impact you day to day. And so you have to educate someone. People don't know that. A lot of young people don't know what not voting means. But if we can impress upon them that it's a day to day change, then that can inspire them to vote.
But I think I think Teresa did make a great point, is that people have to be inspired. And in 2016, you know, there was a lack of motivation. And I think a part of that came from it was an anti-Trump campaign versus why you should vote for me. And whoever the candidate is needs to understand that you're talking to the voter and you're not going anti the other party. And so, and I think that was a lot of, it was a distraction, and that caused a lot of people to not see that, you know what, you don't necessarily have my best interest at heart. Speak to me and what you're going to do to improve my quality of life. And I think that's what people want to hear, and that will inspire them. But I also challenge, you know, people who are listening and in the community and saying that we have to get young people. What are you doing on the grounds to talk to the young people? And, you know, we were talking about it earlier. At times, I felt that the generation more seasoned, I would say your generation, Harold, was afraid to pass the torch to the younger generation and have the conversation and say, hey, let me uplift you. Let me pass it on. Yeah. Now that folks are retiring, I was like, no, I needed you to uplift me along the way, right?
Hold your point. Mm-hmm. I'll let you finish, and I want to get Dr. Scott in on this conversation, too. I know you're sitting here, you're like, wow, look at this. We're going to take a break. And we're going to continue this conversation on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Mustafa calling from D.C. Michael calling from Maryland. You're next. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Jeff Brown with the original Quiet Storm is next on WHUR. But the phones are still open as we continue on Sirius XM Channel 141 in just a few seconds.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU, and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight, we are talking about the youngest generation of voters as we get closer to election 2020. Yes, it is a presidential election year coming our way in just a few months. 2020 is not that far away. And we want to know what the youngest voters I'm thinking about. My guests are Nikedra Robinson, founder of Black Girls Vote, Kayla Andrews, Black Youth Vote advocate with the National Coalition on Black Civic Participation, and Dr. Elsie Scott, director of the Ron Walters Leadership and Public Policy Center at Howard University. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Michael, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, I would like to make a statement.
Go ahead.
And here's the question. When we ask, what are the young voters, Black voters, looking for or thinking or what's on their mind when they look, you know, toward a presidential candidate? My question is, what do you actually know about the individual who's running? And I ask that question for this reason, and this is a statement I'm going to make, and I'm going to be quiet and listen to the response. One, your electors that you voted into office, which is your senators and your congressmen, you need to be very aware that they're the ones who cast your vote. When you vote, it's a popularity vote to show who you're favorable for as far as holding the office of the presidency. That's a popularity vote. The electoral votes are the ones who put people into office, and you have to be aware who controls those votes. This is your people that you select, your senators and your congressmen. So what do you know about the presidential candidate that you're running for, and the statements that you make, I mean, they're very profound and they have a lot of, you know, validity. But you as a person, as a voter, what do you know about the presidential candidate as opposed to what they may
say? Well, Michael, let me see what our guests have to say. Kayla, I'll let you start, and then Nakidri, you're next.
I think that's a very interesting question. I think that knowing a politician is sort of a complex concept because, as we know, politicians play a role, and they have constituents. They're looking to serve their constituents. So oftentimes, a person versus a politician might be two different things. We hope they're the same, but they might be different. And so it's difficult to know if you're meeting a politician or if you're meeting a person. And maybe that comes with some of the anxiety that voters have when they vote. That might be some of the distrust that Black people have historically with politicians and with the concept of voting. And so that might be why you might see some young people kind of unconvinced by people. I think that's what I think another caller is talking about, maybe the fact that Black young voters might be unconvinced by the politicians and by politics themselves. And maybe that's what you're speaking to.
No, I agree. We don't know the politicians fully. I think a lot of times when elected officials go into office, they have one thing in mind, such as an agenda on what they would hope to accomplish. However, we know that they're controlled by the people who fund their campaigns. And what Black people fail to recognize is that we have to support the candidates and people that we vote to get in office. We need to contribute to their campaigns throughout because they're sometimes put in compromising situations. And one thing that we know that politicians don't want to do is lose another election. And so when that happens, you start to see the compromising elected official that we had so much hope in begin to, you know, pander a little bit or switch sides. And so therefore we begin to lose trust in them. But you have to always follow the money. So to answer how well do we know them, we don't know them well. You know, I barely know myself well. There are some things that I think I would do and then I get caught in a situation. I'm like, oh, yeah, I thought I would have done this. So I think it's really hard to say how well do we know them, but how well or how much are we holding them accountable? And I think that's what's important here.
Dr. Scott, how would you define getting to know a candidate? Is this a black and white hashtag facts? Is it holistic? Is it a little bit of both? And how do you, particularly if we're talking about a presidential candidate who we may not be able to attend a town hall and to put our hands on that person?
Well, it's a difficult question because for all the reasons that have already been stated by your other guests, but also because you often get different messages in different places because a candidate will emphasize a certain thing and say something somewhat different in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And we cannot dismiss the impact of campaign financing. And if we were ever going to try to clean up politics in this country, we need to get rid of the Citizens United decision where people don't have to be controlled to a certain extent by the people who fund their campaign because we don't get to know the real person, except maybe if you get a Jimmy Carter mm-hmm. in there. But most other politicians are somewhat controlled. But I want to also say something about Congress, senators, and House members, that people have to recognize that you're not an individual. You don't vote as an individual. You are a part of the House of Representatives, and you're part of a caucus. And some people run and say, you know, well, I'm going to be that independent Republican.
Mr. Smith comes to Washington.
Right. Kind of, yeah. I'm going to be an independent Republican, independent Democrat. But you will find that you won't even have a home. You won't have anybody to talk mm-hmm. with about issues. You won't have anybody support your issues because you're going to have to go along with their issues. And so you vote for things. You look at a straight voting record. It doesn't often tell you where that politician really stands, but he, him or her may need to compromise on that particular vote just because the party says go along with it and they're going to need the party later on to support their issues.
Mm-hmm. Michael, thank you so much for the question. To piggyback on that, which goes back to, I think, the heart of what Andrew Gillum was saying earlier today, is this is the education piece that goes beyond voting for president. And in some cases, going beyond voting for Senate or Congress, it really has to do with understanding how that process works. And, you know, to your point, yes, you have, that's why there's leadership. on the House, in the House and the Senate, and there are often party line votes. But then you have your mavericks. But those are risky positions to be in. I mean, the first person that often comes to mind is a John McCain, you know, but, you know, just by, not only by, you know, his own politics when he was alive, obviously, but also by the sheer power of personality. Some of those people can be successful, but that's a rarity.
Yeah, and you may not be successful. I mean, when Barbara Lee took the lone stand to vote against the war, she was threatened. She had to have extra security. And she didn't really win at that point because everybody else in the Congress voted the other way. Mm-hmm. And she was the lone ranger out there. She could live with herself because she had voted her conscience. And she had voted her district's conscience also because she represents probably the most liberal district in the country. But she didn't win when you look at absolute win, if you base it on the legislation, whether it passed or failed, that she failed there. And so I think as a politician, you have to decide, you know, am I going to try to get some wins by compromising on things, or am I going to be that lone maverick that votes alone? And standing
by those convictions.
Right.
Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Mustafa calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
How you doing, sir? My name is Mustafa. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to jump back on Black Youth Vote. They are some of the strongest young ladies and men that I ever dealt with. I've been dealing with them for 20 years. Absolutely awesome, well-organized, coming from the top. Doc is one of the major organizers. She's very strong. She's just so energetic in getting her point across, and she is brilliant. I've been dealing with the CB this past weekend, and the Congressional Black Caucus, and just watching Doc and the rest of these young ladies and men pull it off. So we don't have any worries, and they well educated, because before they can do anything, they have to be educated, and they are educated. They do their homework. They on the ground. They online, wherever. Ain't nobody tell me, because I've been in war rooms with them. And they are telephone go-getters, groundwork. I was in the Marine Corps.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a former D.C. cop. So when I see this coming from this perspective, well-organized, well-oiled machine. No worries.
Okay.
Don't have any worries.
Well, thank you so much, Mustafa. I appreciate it. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Lloyd on the line. What's on your mind?
Well, first off, I'd love to say I am totally inspired by young folk being able to get up and getting out and knowing more about what's going on. But you must remember that there are no absolutes in life. And because there are no absolutes and there are no term limits, you know, we'll continue to be, you know, bombarded by the same old people having the same kind of ideals. If we look at the turnover in Congress, there has been almost no turnover for years. We get the same people being voted in and out. But I want the young people, especially, to be inspired, to be energetic, to get involved. If you want to make the change, get involved. Be the congressperson. Be the new representative and make those moves so that we can... So we can change it. We can make some changes in this thing.
Okay. Lloyd, thank you so much. I appreciate it. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. I want to go back to Kayla and part of the conversation that we were having actually before the break. You voted in 2016. You were eligible because of where your birthday landed. Why did you vote in 2016? What was it that inspired you? Was this something that you had been looking forward to, something that your parents told you must do? Give me your political autobiography.
Well, if you're asking for it, I actually started getting interested in politics due to, I'm going to shout out one of an amazing history teachers that I've had, Miss Randini Johnson. I don't know if she's ever going to hear it, but she started teaching us African-American history when I was 9 years old. So I've been learning it from 9 to almost like now. That's my major now. So I've always been inspired. I've always known that it was a requirement that I felt in my heart that I had to do it, because it's out of respect, if nothing else, out of respect for the people that fought for that right. Because voting, as I know, as an educated woman, it changes your day-to-day life. And if I can't complain about the things that I didn't seek to change. And so I had to make that decision. And the 2016 was not my favorite or ideal election. But I went out and I voted and I made a decision. And that's not something, voting is not always an easy decision. It almost is never easy, but rather something that you have to feel obligated to do or inspired, or for whatever reason, someone has a passion to do it. And so I felt like it was an absolute requirement. My parents didn't have to tell me. I was like, I'm going to go vote early. I have this day off. I'm going to go. And I did it.
Mm-hmm. Same question for you, Nikidra. You know, what's your political DNA before founding Black Girls Vote?
So my first job working in politics is in Baltimore, working under Mayor Dixon. Had someone told me that I would have been starting an organization about political advocacy, I would have told them, absolutely not. I'll be in New York somewhere living my best life. Right? However, when I got the job, and it's because of relationships, it was in the Office of Neighborhoods, and working in the mayor's office, I got to see firsthand how politicians impact your day-to-day life. And just to see everything starts on the grassroots level. Then I had a chance to work in the governor's office for a little bit and then work at a state agency. And then in 2015, you know, the Freddie Gray incident that happened in Baltimore, that was in walking distance of my home. That's the first thing that happened. The second thing that happened, I lost my political appointee working in the governor's office, because Anthony Brown had lost that election. And so that goes to show the impact of elections. You know, me as a Black woman lost my job, my main source of income. And the needle that broke the camel's back, the third thing that happened, there was a murder that happened directly across the street from me in Baltimore City, directly across the street from me in a park. And so those three things tied together, that's what made me found Black Girls Vote. I said, looking at 2008, 2012, Black women delivered the vote for President Obama. So now going into 2016, we had a local election. We need to come together and not only just vote, but demand policy in exchange for our vote. So for the last 4 years, we've been on the ground just building an organization, still volunteer-based organization. But I see the passion that young Black women have, especially our 18 to 24-year-olds, who don't have anyone who wants to guide them and teach them, but letting them know that they are powerful. So I found my calling that way.
Indeed, you did. We're gonna take a break. When we come back, we are going to continue this discussion about this young generation of voters and what is the future of their political activism. And we're going to ask Dr. Scott to do some philosophical waxing about this as well. Lines are still open. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are talking about the newest generation of voters. What's on their minds? What are they looking for? Kayla, you were talking about a poll that was taken, what was it, yesterday?
Yes. So we did the Black Youth Vote did a survey at the end of our Democratic Debate Watch Party. So under Black Youth Vote, we have different affiliates in different states. So this data is collected from Georgia, Alabama, Michigan, as well as D.C., where we had different watch parties. And so we have found a lot of interesting things here. So a lot of callers have been asking about what millennials are thinking, who they're interested in, and this is kind of how you'll find out. So the most important issues that were addressed in the debate, according to the attendees, were healthcare, immigration, racism, and gun control. And racism and gun control were tied for third. So as you can see, those issues are all kind of universal issues that affect everyone. But I think especially gun control is something that's affecting, I feel like, millennials, and especially maybe even people younger than that, of course, who can't vote but might be related to the millennials in a closer way. We're really feeling that that's one of the most important issues. And so also we asked a question to address the Black woman moderator. I don't know her name. And but we asked how that impacted the way that the debate ran. And 81.3% said that was a positive impact on the debate. And she absolutely killed it. Her questions were right on task. Just incredibly informative and also hard-hitting questions that people wanted to ask, but maybe some moderators in the past have been scared to address, but she went in on all of the candidates, if I can say it that way.
Was there anything about this survey, the results, that surprised you?
I think that the moderator question asking about the black woman as a moderator, I think it surprised me that so many people agreed with me and how positively it was impacting, because as we know, representation is everything. And seeing yourself on a stage, on a platform, doing what other people have done and not knowing if you could do it, but then seeing her do it and do it well, and some might even argue better than others, was impressive and was important. So I was happy to see that other people agreed with my personal opinions. And of course, this is just data from NCBCP. So we're glad to share it with everyone else and prove that black women can do everything that they put their minds to.
You know, something that struck me today when I interviewed Andrew Gillum, this was right before his presentation, and certainly this was for a class, but it was open to anyone. And this is particularly the case for a question for you, Nikedra. Where are the guys? Because in this class, mm-hmm. it was almost all black women. Well, we're at Howard. So, you know, yeah. I mean, you know, you got to do is throw a yeah. rock and you're going to hit right. a black woman. Yeah. But, mm-hmm. but to that point, mm-hmm. you know, the person who introduced Andrew Gillum was a junior political science major from New Jersey. Forgot the young man's name. Very, very intelligent, very engaged. But there were very few men in this audience. Mm-hmm. And
the problem.
Yeah, so what's, you know, even mm-hmm. you know, even with, you know, black girls vote, as the father of a, she'll always be a girl even though she's 21. You know,
it's your baby girl.
Yeah. She, you know, she leads the boys or mm-hmm. the young men in her life, but I'm just surprised that these young women, for whatever reason, weren't bringing the guys in. What's going on with the men?
We have to look at, you know, the population, how many, you know, looking at college campuses, there are more black women than men in a lot of cases. And who's preparing those young black boys? You know, when we look at the data, more black men are birthed than black women. But at a certain point, due to deaths, you know, looking at the city of Baltimore, over 300 murders per year that happen, times 10 years, that's 3,000 majority black men who are no longer here. So looking at the data, who's empowered? We see a lot of people empowering black women, but who's empowering the black men? Who am I going to marry? Who our daughter's going to marry? And we have to look at that and how it impacts the overall household. And are they on the college campuses? Are they paired enough? You know, we're celebrated all the time, African-American women, the most educated group. But then we're leaving our black men behind. So that's important. And when we look at, as we grow together, we have to look at the parity. How do we support each other? And as black women, we do have the ability to influence them. Hey, babe, can I get my boyfriend registered to vote and vote? Absolutely. We have that power and that influence. But how do we shift and have them be more motivating us as well? So I think we have to look at both and say, how do we collectively work together and empower not only just the black woman, but empower the black man as well?
You know, one of the other things about this, there's an early look at the 2020 election. The Pew Research Center did this. And one of the things that I think is really striking, it says there are more Hispanic than black yeah. eligible voters. What's going on, Dr. Scott?
Well, the Hispanic population has grown faster mm-hmm. than the black population. So it had been predicted after the last census, or even before the last census, that the Hispanic population would take over, because blacks are having fewer babies than they were, mm-hmm. you know, because we spend a lot of time talking about teenage pregnancies yeah. and the young girls listen to us.
Yeah, the rates for yeah. African American teenage pregnancy have gone down significantly mm-hmm. over the past 10 years or so.
And yeah. now the parents are even complaining that even when my daughter graduates from college and even when she gets married, she's not having children.
Mm-hmm. I said, what do you want? I mean, I got out of college, I got a job, and now you want children? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, but one other factor that was not mentioned in terms of the black male is so many black males in prison.
Incarcerated, yeah.
Yeah, incarcerated. And then even when we get legislation, we get a constitutional amendment in Florida to change this where they can be voting when they come out. Mm-hmm. Now we have legislation in the Florida legislature that invalidated much of that, because now they have to pay all fines anywhere in the whole state of Florida before they'll be able to vote. So I think there are some barriers that are placed in black men's way in order to keep them from voting and keep them from being engaged. But some of it also is on them, because when we look at who votes, that women get out in larger numbers, black women get out in larger numbers. And so what we do at the Black Women's Roundtable, we tell women to take your significant others with you and take every male that you can find to the poll if he is qualified to vote, because they're not voting. And then they tend to not vote exactly like women. Mm-hmm. You know, if you look at the vote for Obama, that a greater percentage of women voted for Obama, black women voted for Obama than black men.
I'll thank you for that, Dr. Scott. I only have about a minute or so left. Kayla, I'll let you have a last word real quick, and then Nakedra.
Yes, I would agree with everything that they've already stated. I think that, especially to Dr. Scott's last point, that I think black men tend to vote differently than black women, and we have to sit and address why that is, and if that's a problem, and how that can be addressed. And I think that the best way is to educate and to share your information. Everybody knows knowledge is power, but to who do you share your knowledge with? Who are you informing? How are you sharing that information, and is it being received? And so we have to ask for, knowledge to be shared, and for everyone to get inside and work together to address any issue that they have in terms of elections and candidates.
Nakedra, you can have the last word.
No, I agree with everything that was shared.
Of course you all did.
Yes, of course. I mean, of course, you brought a dynamic panel together. Thank you, Candace. I would just say that the cornerstone of the black family, a black community, is the black family. And so we have to get back into the black family and the black structure and saying, hey, how do we improve our collective quality of life? And it goes back to the economics. We can't talk about politics or improving our quality of life unless we talk about the economics and the wealth gap, right, that we are experiencing as people of color. So to improve our life overall, we got to get more money as people of color. But then also, once we are more cohesive, will be strong as a family unit. And you'll see an increase in voter turnout amongst black people, I believe.
Well, we will continue to watch as we move closer to election 2020. Nakedra Robinson, Kayla Andrews, and of course, Dr. Elsie Scott, thank you for coming in and sharing with us, and looking forward to see what all of you are going to be doing in the future. Again, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That is the Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141 for this Friday, September 13th. I'm Harold Fisher. Now stay tuned for The Connection. Good night and have a wonderful weekend.